Glad to see the Brubakers here. I'm glad to see all of you again. There's a few unfamiliar faces to me, so just like to say I'm from here, from Harmony Christian Fellowship, moved up to Vermont 2 years ago, and we're trying to get a little church established up there. Glad to be here. So for a message this morning, I've been going through the last while, I've been going through the book of Proverbs. If I don't have any inspiration outside of that, then I take the next chapter in Proverbs. And so that's what I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to take the next chapter in Proverbs. I preached this at up in Danby last Sunday. The Brubakers were not there, so thankfully they don't have to hear it a second time. All right, to start out, I'd like to ask a couple questions. How many of you know what Shady Maple Smorgasbord is? All right. Anybody not know what Shady Maple Smorgasbord is? All right. So I think we all know what that is. At Shady Maple Smorgasbord, they have 110,000 square feet of restaurant. Or you can come and they have a buffet line. You can come and all you can eat. You can have all the options of Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. They have space for 1,200 customers to be seated. So you get that picture of all this, the food. There's enough of food for everybody. They're seating for 1,200 people. It's a lot of people. It's a business that started out as a young couple, Miriam and Marvin Weaver. They took over their her parents' roadside stand, and that thing grew from a roadside stand to a grocery store, and then in time they added a little hot dog stand, which was the first concept of a restaurant for them, and then that thing grew little bit by little bit until today it's this huge restaurant. It seems like it's a business that's been blessed and has done very well. You get that picture of all this food, all this seating, there's room for everybody. They specialize in Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. And I'm going to say for myself, and you don't have to agree with me, this isn't the gospel, this is opinion. I think Pennsylvania Dutch cooking has got to be pretty close to the top, if it's not the top. And I'll just leave that for what it is. Now come with me to get the picture of, I'm going to give you a picture of my mom's family. I don't mean to put my mom on the spot this morning, but I think she can handle it. We would get together through the years, every year around Christmas time or Thanksgiving time. And it was a tradition that we would get together as a family, all of her siblings. Mom had five sisters and two brothers, and they would all get together with grandma and grandpa, called mom and pop, get together at, as the family grew, until I came along, the family was pretty large, and we often would meet at a school or a gym or a church or someplace to have our Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner. And all of mom's sisters and the sister-in-laws and grandma would bring a dish. And the background we come from is Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. And I don't know what the arrangement was. I was never involved in making the food. But I believe each one of the sisters brought several dishes to this meal. It was a time that was very anticipated. We always looked forward to getting together, seeing our cousins from out of state, cousins that we didn't get together with very often, get to see. It was a looked forward to event. We'd all gather together at the appointed time. Usually it was probably a Sunday afternoon after church, get together, sit down together, and before we'd eat, we'd always bow our head and pray, and one of Mom's brothers, or Pop, when he was still living, he would say the prayer, and then we'd all be sitting in our groups. Usually the young men, I was with the young men group. I don't know if there was anything really official, but it was kind of the understood thing where you sat, where the young ladies sat together, the young men sat together, and then the little children sat together. It was very organized, very orderly in its own way. Occasionally there would be, Pop was a generous man. He would often invite some neighbor or stranger or relative of some sort and bring these people in too. There wasn't a lot of them, but usually there'd be one or two there. Well, especially when Pop was still living, there'd be somebody there. But then I remember after the prayer was said, we'd be sitting there and the food would start to come. And first dish would come past, dig in. And I was always taught that you eat what's set before you, right? I think we're all taught that. And so the first dish would come past and you'd take a modest helping and pass it to the next person. Next dish would come, take another modest helping, pass it to the next one. Third dish would come, modest helping. Fourth dish would come, my plate's getting kind of full. A little less than a regular helping. Pass it. Next dish. I can't eat all this food, okay? I'm supposed to take a little bit of everything because I wouldn't want any one of the sisters to feel like their dish wasn't good. Every dish was the top. And so by the fifth, sixth, I don't know how many dishes came past, but after a while, you're just taking a little bit. Because if you would take a modest helping of everything, soon you had way too much food. In fact, I think I'd go as far as to say, if you took just a very small helping of every dish, you'd probably have too much food. Because there was just that much. And it was all good. We all liked the food. It was all, like, these ladies put all their energies into making the best of food. I remember specifically at one meal, I was sitting there with my cousins about my age, the young men, and we can all eat a lot of food because we're growing men, but I remember one of them saying, "When's this food going to stop? I mean, I can't take any more. It's just so much." All right, now back to the Shady Maple scene. Shady Maple specializes in Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. But I have to say, I've been there a few times, not very often, but I have to say, I've been disappointed when I go there because I think I found a group of cooks that can outperform them with Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. So if you can just put that picture in your mind, put yourself at my family's gathering in your own, however you can imagine that. You're at the family gathering. There's plenty of food. There's a celebration of seeing all of your cousins, the families together. There's happiness. There's joy. Oftentimes we would sing together. We would play games together. If we rented a school or a gym or something, there might be a foosball table and a pool table, and people play games. And there's just this afternoon of just fun to be together. It's an exciting time to be together. There's plenty of food for everybody. If anybody went home from that day and was still hungry, there was only one person that you could blame, and that was yourself, because there was plenty of food to go around. So if you can just put yourself in that scene as we go into Proverbs, picture that picture of just a joyful time of getting together, plenty of food, plenty of just enough for everybody, and there's still more. Everybody would go home with some leftovers. There's plenty for everybody. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs chapter 9, that's the chapter we're ready for. For a title, I'm going to call my message, Two Women with an Invitation. Proverbs chapter 9, let's read the first six verses. Wisdom hath builded her house. She hath hewn out her seven pillars. She hath killed her beasts. She hath mingled her wine. She hath also furnished her table. She hath sent forth her maidens. She crieth upon the highest places of the city. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith unto him, Come, Eat of my bread and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding." All right, so here is wisdom impersonated as a woman. This is the first woman with an invitation. So let's just take this apart verse by verse and just look at what she's saying here. "Wisdom hath builded her house and hewn out her seven pillars." I'm not sure what the significance of the seven pillars are. As I looked and studied into that, it seems like there's a lot of different ideas of what these seven pillars could be. So maybe if somebody has that figured out, I'd be glad for some input on that. But I get the picture that maybe these seven pillars are just there as, you know, the house is prepared, the house is built strong, the house is built to look good. She's prepared. She's preparing her banquet, and she's got this house that's ready to be used. All right, so she's got the house. Verse 2, "She hath killed her beasts, she hath mingled her wine, and has furnished her table." So if we're preparing for this feast, wisdom is preparing by going out and killing a beast. What is the beast? Probably some kind of a steer or maybe some chickens or some kind of an animal that she's got the meat. She's preparing this meat for the feast. It's something of substance. It's something that when you take it and you eat it, there's actually some value to it. "She hath mingled her wine and hath furnished her table." Her wine, now we don't drink alcoholic beverages. I don't know if that's exactly what it means here, but I get the picture of whatever the beverage was, there's some preparation going into that. There was maybe different kinds of fruits or something that she pressed it together and created this drink that was delicious and nourishing. And there's something in that drink that when you take that drink, it's good and you want more of it, and it's filling and it's healthy and it's sustaining. It says, "She also hath furnished her table." Her tables are made ready. There's a plate there. There's utensils. There's a cup. Maybe there's a tablecloth. Maybe she even laid out some decorations or something to make this a feast that you're excited to come to, that you can come and partake of this thing. So that's all prepared. Verse 3, it says, "She has sent forth her maidens and crieth upon the highest places of the city." Wisdom has maidens that are helping her. So this table, this house is ready for the meat, for the feast. And she sends out her maidens to invite the passerbys. These maidens go to the highest place of the city. I picture they're up on the wall calling down into the streets, "Come to my feast. I have a table prepared for you." And I don't know if the highest places are necessarily on the top of the wall or if she's actually going into the high places like where the president is. I think either could be applicable, where wisdom is crying to everybody, whether it's the highest people, whether it's the lowest people, whether she's crying from a high place to call to the low people. Wisdom is calling to everybody. Her maidens are calling to everybody. What's the message? Verse 4, "Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither." Are we simple this morning? Do we have things to learn? And I don't like to think of myself as simple, but there's some things that if you ask me a certain question, I'd be pretty simple in. Can we admit that we don't know everything? We have some, each one of us has some simplicity that wisdom can speak into. And so she's calling to us, "Are you simple? Come in. I have something for you." "To him that is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding," do we want understanding? I think we do. If we're wise, we want understanding. And wisdom is crying to us that I have wisdom. I can take care of your simple problem. I can take care of your lack of understanding. Come in with me. "Come eat of my bread and drink of my wine which I have mingled." She's prepared this for us to help us with our simplicity, with our lack of understanding. And she ends with this, "Forsake the foolish." In order for us to come to her, to wisdom's banquet, we have to turn away from the foolish. There has to be a physical turning away of our own ignorance, of our own lack of understanding. We have to turn away from that and come into wisdom. "Forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding." All right, so we get the picture. Wisdom's prepared our house. Wisdom is calling to the simple and those that lack understanding. How will we respond? All right, let's go to verse 13. We're going to skip over the middle verses there. We're going to go to verse 13. All right, we're going to look at the invitation of the foolish woman. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. For she sitteth at the door of her house on a seat in the high places of the city to call passengers who go right on their ways. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. Okay, so we have another invitation here. We had the invitation of the wise, of wisdom. Now we have the invitation of the foolish woman. Both foolishness and wisdom are pictured here as a woman. So starting out in verse 13, what does this woman look like? It says she is clamorous. And what I get the picture of when I think of clamorous, she's loud. She might have something that physically looks attractive. She might have herself all pretty. She might have a voice that's very enticing. She is a carnal, sensual pleasurer. But she is simple and knoweth nothing. This clamorous is maybe a boisterous is another word. She has a lot of noise and a lot of show, but the substance underneath is, well, we'll take a look at that. She is simple and knoweth nothing. So what is she doing? She says she's sitting at the door of her house on a seat in the high places of the city. So she also has a house. Now, it doesn't say anything about hewn seven pillars, but she has a house. She has a feast prepared. It says she sitteth in the door of her house on a seat in the high places of the city. And I'm not sure how to pull all that verse apart, but I get the picture that she also is going to these high places and calling to passengers, people that are going by. She's calling out. She has the same invitation. Whoso is simple, whosoever lacks understanding, come into me. It says she's calling to people who go right on their ways. Verse 15, she's trying to get people that are even living right to turn away from the right and come into her. Now it says nothing here about mingled wine or killing the beast or anything like that. She doesn't really have food prepared. It says in verse 17, stolen waters are sweet. The best thing that she has to offer is stolen waters. And bread eaten in secret is pleasant. So you get the picture that she's calling out, and the best thing that she has, after all her clamor and show, the best thing that she has to offer is stolen waters and secrecy, that where when you come into her house, you kind of have to look this way and look that way. You want to look around, maybe behind you, so that nobody sees you go there. You want to go there in secret, because this is not right. There's a conscience in here that's already beginning to prick, but the picture is that she has enticed through the carnality and the sensuousness of herself to turn away from the right, to go in unto her. Once you're there, what does she have to offer? It's stolen waters and bread eaten in secret. Now, just looking at it here in a group of people, that's not a very attractive meal to go to, is it? But somehow people are turning in to her all the time. And there's a warning put here that we don't fall for this trap. The bait looks absurd, that you would actually go to eat stolen waters and bread eaten in secret. Let's just turn to Proverbs chapter 20 for a little bit. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 17. Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. Somehow I believe in the inner workings of the carnal heart and our own personal carnality, there's something attractive about secrecy, about doing things that are hidden, about doing something naughty that's, we're eating stolen waters, you know, there's plenty of water to be gotten rightly, but somehow the stolen waters, it looks attractive. We can do this thing. We can get away with this. See what we can do and get away with it. There's a carnal heart, but afterwards, when the conscience starts working, it says your mouth will be filled with gravel. Verse 18 in chapter 9, it says, but he knoweth not that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. So Solomon, as the writer here, he exposes the hook that's in her bait. And her bait looks kind of pathetic, but somehow in our carnal heart, we can latch onto that and say, that looks good. But there's a hook in that bait that if we bite that bait, if we go the way of the foolish woman, her guests are in the depths of hell. Do we want to be the guest of the foolish woman and end up in the depths of hell? Well, sitting here this morning, I don't think any of us would raise our hand and say, that would be me. I'd just love to do that. But somehow these things are things that happen in the secret places of our heart that can take us there. And we need to be on guard for that. We need to hear the wisdom of Solomon that we can avoid those hooks. James 1:14, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Through his own lust and enticement, he defies the warnings of his conscience. There's a quote here I have from Matthew Henry as I was studying here. Do not all persons of rank and figure in the world give themselves to a greater liberty than the strict laws of virtue that the strict laws of virtue allow? Why shouldst thou humble thyself so far as to be cramped by them? Thus the tempter affects to seem both kind and great. Let's avoid this woman. Let's allow ourselves to be cramped by the laws that would keep us from doing those things. There is actually greater liberty in having these boundaries to keep us from this foolish woman. All right, let's move on. Now I want to go back and look at the middle verses here. Verse 7. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself a shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. So these next couple of verses, I'm sure they could be taken a lot of different ways, but because of where they're placed, we have this chapter where we have these two invitations. We have the invitation of the wise of wisdom here, and then at the end we have the invitation of the foolish. And these, there's a few verses right here in the middle. I'm going to take it that these verses are the responses of the people invited. And I'm sure we could probably take these different ways, but that's how I'm going to look at them this morning. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself a shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. For by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself, but if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. All right, so let's look at it this way. We already know we don't want to respond to the foolish woman's invitation. We all agree on that. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on how we're going to respond to that. I think we already know if we hear a foolish woman calling, turn and go away. Avoid it. We don't go with a foolish woman. But how do we do that? Wisdom is also calling out with an invitation. What do we do with the invitation of the wise woman? Verse 7, he that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself a shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. I get the picture that wisdom's maidens are out calling, inviting people to her table. And these maidens that are going out are putting this invitation to individuals and groups and passerbys that are going by. And these people are responding different ways. And the first one we get to is a scorner. She calls out to an individual, come with me to my banquet. I have my wine is mingled, my meat is prepared, my table is set, my house is ready. And she gets a scorner. And what's a scorner? Basically a mocker. They're mocking, ha, I don't want to go with you. I'm not interested. I have other things. I'm not interested. And it's telling her, don't reprove him. Let him go. Maybe she invited a wicked man. And it says, he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. If she goes and invites a wicked man, she's going to get a blot. And it's okay to put the invitation out for everybody, but if a wicked man is not interested, move on. Go to the next person. Invite the next person. It said, give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. All right, so I get the picture there that when she comes to a wise man, when wisdom comes to a wise man will listen, and he will be more wise. I was doing a little bit of a online course on how to be professional in work, and a line that stood out to me in this online course was that professionals learn from, that they continue to learn from everybody. So if I'm the professional and I'm coming to your house to, maybe I'm a professional roofer or sider, and I'm going to come to your house, you called me to come replace your roof, and I have the answer. I have shingles, I have hammers, I got tools, I can fix your leak, I can, you know, make the flashing on all the valleys and the chimneys and whatever needs to be done, that can all be done correctly. But maybe you don't know it, but you're working for a retired roofer. And he's done this for, you know, 25 or 30 years. You've done it for 3. And I have all the answers. I'm coming to fix your roof. Well, a professional man will go in there, and when the customer gives instruction, he'll learn. He'll listen. He'll become wiser by listening. Now, not all customers are smarter than the professional coming to work, but a professional will learn. He'll listen. He'll at least listen and hear what's being said. An amateur knew it all already. He doesn't need any more. He has it all. And so I get that same picture here, that a wise man will go to the wisdom's banquet and learn even more. Are you a wise man? Will you increase in learning? Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. I believe we can take from that that it's right for us to continue to have an open heart and an open mind and continue to learn wisdom's ways. As long as we're here on this earth, I think we'll continue to learn. We always have some areas in our lives that are simple and that lack understanding. Continue to learn. Then we have this verse thrown in here, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. And all that we do, all like when we go to wisdom's banquet, we have to go with the baseline, with the fear of God. We have to understand that in all of this, if we don't fear God, that's where we get lost in the ways of the foolish woman. The knowledge of the holy is understanding. When we have those two things, the fear of God, the knowledge of God, that's when we can grow. That's when we can become wiser. Verse 11, for by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. Now, after the flood, somewhere in there, God told man that he would live an average of 70 years. And I know that that maybe gets stretched a little higher in the day that we live in today. It says, for by wisdom your years shall be multiplied. Does that mean that we're going to live twice a lifetime? Are we going to live 200 years now? Because I don't necessarily look at it that way. I think one way we could look at it is, if you're foolish, you can shorten your life and you'll die. You can die sooner because of just foolish actions. But I also believe there's something else here that we can pull out, and that is, when we use wisdom, maybe if it's in, I like the picture of child training, or maybe a business scenario, we'll use the child training one. If we train our children when they're little, as they grow, they develop, they mature, and they become more and more of who God wants them to be, and that can actually free up your home life as a couple, as a family. Your years are multiplied, your years are increased, you live a full life. Whereas if you're not training your children when they're little, the older you get, the more work it is to try to train these children, and it actually reduces your life because you're focusing on something you should have taken care of years ago. Or in a business world, if we're not establishing our business correctly and we're building on a shaky foundation, the thing can fall apart later. Whereas if it's built correctly, block by block, carefully, as that thing grows, we can delegate work out, we can increase our business in a way that is strong and healthy, and we can live a fuller life that can free us of time, of labor, whatever it is. Is that making sense? Where I believe we can live a fuller life in all, not just child training, not just business, but in all areas of life, where we can, by wisdom, we can live a full life, and our years and our days will be increased. Then we have verse 12. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself, but if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. I take it that if you're wise, you go into the wise woman, go to her banquet. There's a reward that you get yourself. You can't pass that reward to somebody else. That reward, by your own wise choosing to go into the wise woman, you will receive the reward yourself. But if you're the scorner, you also bear the reproach of your scorning. All right, turn with me to Matthew chapter 22. I'm going to look at another feast here and just parallel that with what we just looked at here. Matthew chapter 22. Verse 1, and Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son. And he sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth one servant. Again he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden, behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen, my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their way, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways, and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. And the king came in to see the guests, and he saw there was a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, friend, how camest thou in hither not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to his servants, bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. All right, so I got another picture here of another feast that was prepared. And the messengers are sent out. The invitation is sent out. Come to this feast. And look at the responses we get. In verse 5, they made light of it. There was this scorning again. Here's the scorner. They made light of it and went their ways. One to his farm, another to his merchandise. They had reasons to not come to the feast. They had their own reasons. And these reasons aren't necessarily bad things that they're doing. They're not doing bad things. But the good things in their lives are taking away from being able to go to this feast. I think that's maybe a warning to us that we need to be willing to keep our lives freed up in a way that we can hear invitations call. Are we too busy to hear the call and to respond when wisdom calls to us? Of course, the king was upset when he heard all of these excuses, and in verse 6, it says, the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. Some of the responses was so drastic that they slew the inviters. That the people that were invited killed the inviters. What kind of a response is that? That sounds like we're just deliberately going the way of the foolish, right? You can't do both. It's one or the other. And of course, when the king heard of it, he went and destroyed those people and burned up their cities. And then he's like, go out and invite everybody. This invitation is for everybody. It's not just for my own people, but it's for everybody. He was going to have his wedding feast full. Then we have this man here that comes in without a wedding garment on. And I'm not sure exactly what all that is a picture of. But I get the picture that maybe, and you can give me some input later if you have more ideas here, but I get the picture that he was one of these men that had a farm and didn't want to come to the feast, but rather than killing the inviters and making excuse, whatever, I'll come to your feast, but I'm not going to come prepared. I don't want to be there, but maybe out of spite, I'm going to come with my dirty clothes on or my work clothes. I'm just going to come to your feast because you're trying to get me to come. I get a picture of a heart towards the king that was not prepared, an unprepared heart. Maybe a little bit of an arrogant heart toward the king, where I can kind of do my own thing. I don't have to do what is traditionally the right thing to do here. I can do my own thing. I can come in my own clothes. It doesn't have to be my wedding garment. And when the king came in to see this, he asked him, why don't you have your wedding garment on? And all of a sudden, I think the conscience smote him, and he realized what he did, where he came in unprepared, and he had no answer. There was nothing he could say. I take this parable as a picture of God inviting his people to his supper. And so I would put it that God is a picture, or the king is a picture of God here. And I don't think of God as somebody who is a harsh God that just very quickly and easily binds somebody up and casts them into outer darkness. But the God we serve, if we come to him unprepared, with a heart of arrogance, we cannot do that before a holy God. A holy God has to deal with sin, with justice. And that's, I believe, what happened here, where there was justice needed to be delivered to this unprepared heart. May we have a prepared heart when we come to the feast that God is inviting us to. Meeting the king with an unprepared heart is sure death. All right, I have one more here yet. Let's turn to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, verse 16. Then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper and bade many, and sent his servants at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. And they with all They all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground. I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, I have married a wife, therefore I cannot come. Once again, we see all the excuses, and they're not bad things. I think marrying a wife is a good thing. Buying a piece of land. Buying oxen, I don't know that any of us necessarily buy oxen, but we could get almost the picture of a piece of equipment. We bought a piece of equipment, I got to go try this thing out. All of these things are right things for us to be doing, but if when they get in the way of wisdom, it's not a good thing. Even our own wives can keep us if our focus is not on wisdom. Verse 21, so that servant came and showed his lord these things, and the master of the house, being angry, said unto his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor, the maimed, the halt, and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and hedges, and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. The king will have his house full. He's not gonna leave his table empty. He's gonna be compelling, calling as many people as can come. There is enough of food for everybody. There's enough that if everybody fills their plate, there's still leftovers. And he's gonna have everybody come. And that's how wisdom's banquet table is. There is more food than when you go to the Martin family gathering and you take a little bit of everything and there's too much food on your plate and there's still more to be had. That's the picture that I get with wisdom's banquet. There's plenty of food. If for the extra people that Grandpa invites in, there's plenty of food. We could invite the whole town. Now, I don't think in that case we could have, but at wisdom's banquet, there's plenty of food. A Shady Maple smorgasbord where there's more wisdom to be had than what we can even contain. It's all there. And the king is going to have his house full. Will we be one of those that are at the king's supper? The Lord said unto his servants, go into the highways and hedges and compel them and come in, that the house may be filled. For I say unto you that none of those which were bidden shall taste my supper. If you are bidden and you make excuse, and you continue to make excuse, and you keep, maybe you're one that slew the inviters. Maybe you're one that scorned and mocked. Maybe you're one that is the wicked and didn't respond, just scoffed it off, and I have my own things. Maybe we're not those. We have all good things going on in our lives, but we're not able to be at wisdom's banquet. Will that be us, or will we be the wise one that says, yes, I'm wise, but I'm simple. I lack understanding. I need what wisdom has to offer. I need more of that food. I need to fill my plate. My plate is only half full. I'm not taking all of what wisdom has to offer. But we be that person. There's no room for at this supper table for people with excuses. And if we come to this supper, let's come with a prepared heart. Let's have our wedding garment on, ready to partake of the feast that wisdom has to offer. May God bless you.